Some investments do have higher expected returns than others. Which ones? Well, by and large, they're the ones that will do the worst in bad times. William F. Sharp. Bad. Money Machine. Show 118. Friday, July 4th. Happy Independence Day, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer, the Man Money Machine. And have you reached your financial freedom? Are you financially independent? Well, I hope through the course of listening to this show, you've gained the wisdom and information you need to get yourself on a course of financial freedom. The Mad Money Machine is proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Please go to their website and let them help you find your financial freedom. Read something now from Mark Hebner at IFA. William Sharp tells us that if we want to achieve higher expected returns, we must be able to both emotionally and financially be able to withstand the increased volatility that inevitably comes with higher expected returns. Risk is the source of returns. Sharp's Nobel Prize winning research was his 1964 Capital Asset Pricing Model, CAPM, in which he broke down a portfolio's risk into, get this, systematic or non-specific risk and non-systematic or specific risk. All right. Systematic risk refers to the risks of the entire market as opposed to the risks specific to one stock. These market-wide risks are tied to large-scale risks like the risk of capitalism being a viable economic social system. Other risks not specific to one stock include war, recession, inflation, and government policies. If you invested in the stock market, you cannot diversify away systematic risk. It is, in fact, the risk of investing in the market system. Ah, but non-systematic risk refers to those risks that are specific to individual companies. Examples include lawsuits, fraud, competition, and other unique circumstances related to a company. The important fact for investors to understand it that is there's no added expected return for non-systematic risk above the expected return for systematic risk. This is a very big idea that essentially says that all stocks have an expected return that is the same as the market or a market index fund return. However, those stocks have more uncertainty of the expected return. The incremental risk of one stock, the non-systematic risk, is unrewarded risk and therefore should be avoided by investors. However, the systematic risk of capitalism is essentially the market risk and has earned an annualized return of about 10% per year for 80 years. But in periods of less than 10 years, the annualized returns can be very volatile and uncertain. In periods longer than 20 years, the annualized returns of each period are far more consistent than 1 to 5 year periods. All right, so what are the trade-offs between risk and return? They are inseparable. This means that investors must often face bedeviling trade-offs between risk and return. There's no way around these decisions since they're required in order to build portfolios. For example, sometimes investors look at short-term CD rates. They like the certainty and stability of CD returns, but they feel they need to obtain higher returns, so these investors turn to stocks. But when they focus on the years of negative returns, they become uncomfortable because of their aversion to losses. The result of all this is the, quote, eat well slash sleep well dilemma, unquote. That is, if investors want to eat well and earn higher returns with stocks, they'll need to be prepared to take more risk and go through the volatile roller coaster ride of fluctuations in the value of their portfolio. But if they want to sleep well, they must take less risk. That is, they invest in fixed income investments such as bonds and accept that they'll earn lower returns. Thus, the price of obtaining greater long-term accumulation of wealth with stocks is frightening fluctuations in the value of a portfolio. There really is no free lunch in investing. It's the same old story of risk and return trade-offs identified by Markowitz. High risk exposure is like a scream-inducing roller coaster with soaring highs and stomach-churning lows. Investors should hop on a milder ride if they don't like the extreme rush of the one they're on. So the Mad Money Machine didn't start out as a show about the Federal Reserve, but if the name fits, well, talk about it. So let's figure out, first of all, I want to know, has anyone in the listening audience, were you ever taught about money anywhere in your education, in high school, in college? Were you taught what money is and where it comes from? Really like to know the answer to that. Please email me, feedback@madmoneymachine.com, if you were taught where money comes from. Here is one man's definition of where money comes from. And he talks about this Mad Money Machine. He says the entire function of this machine is to convert debt, D-E-B-T, into money. It's just that simple. First, the Fed takes all the government bonds, which the public does not buy, and writes a check to Congress in exchange for them. There is no money to back up this check from the Fed to the government for its bonds. These fiat dollars are created on the spot for that purpose. By calling these bonds, quote, reserves, the Fed then uses them as the base for creating 9 additional dollars for every dollar created for the bonds themselves. The money created for the bonds is spent by the government, whereas the money created on top of those bonds is the source of all bank loans made to the nation's businesses and individuals. The result of this process is the same as creating money on a printing press, but the illusion is based on an accounting trick rather than a printing trick. The bottom line is that Congress and the banking cartel have entered into a partnership in which the cartel has the privilege of collecting interest on money which it creates out of nothing. A perpetual override on every American dollar that exists in the world. Congress, on the other hand, has the access to unlimited funding without having to tell the voters their taxes are being raised through the process of inflation. If you understand this, you understand the Federal Reserve System. I'll footnote this paragraph in the show notes of this show. So where does money come from? It comes from loans. When you take out a loan, it is at that point that money is created. What if you pay back your loan? Money goes away. So yeah, in theory, if everybody paid back their loans, I suppose at exactly the same time, including the government, there would be no money. So because of the fractional reserve banking system, basically when a bank does get some assets in on its balance sheets, it can loan out $9 for every $1 it has. But isn't that strange? When you go take out a loan from a bank, they don't reach back into some vault somewhere and grab the money and give it to you. They create it right then and there. There was no money before. The money is created and then given to you as a loan. So what are you paying interest on when you pay back your loan? I wouldn't call it so much interest as a usage fee or a handling fee, because they're not letting you borrow their money. They're creating the money and charging you a fee. So, with all of the credit expansion that's been going on for the past however many years, credit expansion, loan expansion means money expansion. And what is money expansion also known as? It's known as inflation. When you expand the supply of money and credit, that is inflation. Now, what is a result of inflation? Higher prices on things. Now, does one correlate to the other on the same day? In other words, if I were to take out a loan today, would prices be higher tomorrow or the same day? No. The effects of this can take years to be observed. What we're seeing in the high rising prices of commodities today, is that the result of the giant credit expansion of the recent years? Now I ask you this question. Banks are tightening up their loans now. First of all, why is this? If they're creating money out of thin air and you don't pay it back, what do they care, right? But that's what they're worried about. They're worried about foreclosures, and they have to own all these houses that they can't get their money back. And so credit is tightening up. The credit crunch. What's another name for that? Deflation. What's a result of deflation? Lower prices result from deflation. When will that happen? Does it happen instantly? No. It'll take a few years to work its way through the system. Not many people, I don't think, are talking about the great deflation to come. I think it's worth looking into to figure out how should we position ourselves to handle the great deflation. Perhaps stock prices are the quickest to react to the great deflation. Perhaps that's why stock prices are already taking a big tumble after their large run up. How much would you pay for lunch with Warren Buffett? In Time Magazine, Guy Spier and Monish Pabri, who both run a U.S.-based investment fund, isn't that where the money is, where the money is? They spent $650,000 to have a three-hour lunch with Warren Buffett on June 25th. They said it was worth every dime. Buffett ordered a medium rare steak with hash browns and a cherry Coke. And I'm betting that most of the advice that he gave these guys was stuff that you could find anywhere in his annual reports. For example, Buffett explained that vital to his success is focusing only on investments that lie within his, quote, circle of competence, unquote. How many thousands of times have we already heard that one? The authors say that 2 days after their meal, an auction closed on eBay for next year's lunch with Buffett. The winner was a Chinese money manager, of course, named Zhao Dangyang, and he bid $2.1 million. So that proves that their $650,000 lunch was a total bargain. And I'm wondering, how can I get in on some of this money? I want to be an investment manager like these guys. It takes money to make money, doesn't it? Or in the case of these guys, you makes money by taking money from everybody else. I'd like to pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib this week. I have told you in the past that I use Natera Bonsai's outlining program as the basis for creating each of one of my Mad Money Machine shows. All 118 episodes are in outlines in this program. But there's one thing I wish that it did that it doesn't do, and that is, I wish it was web-enabled. Well, That's where our tool in the crib this week comes in. A website called Loose Stitch. LOOSESTICH is an online outliner that you can get to from just about any web browser. And I'm told that you can also get to it from your iPhone. Now, iPhone comes out in about 7 days. Not that I'm counting, but wouldn't it be great if I could carry around an iPhone and be able to plug in show notes, ideas for the show as I come across them into this loosestitch.com online outliner. And then when I get back to my web browser, I can pull those things up, manipulate them easily, and as I'm doing a show, go through each of the items. That is our tool in the crib this week. I encourage you to check it out. There is a free account available at loosestitch.com. Like most of the other tools I've used so far, this one is free. Are you glad that June is over? Mark Hulbert in MarketWatch.com says the 10.2% loss produced in June by the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and really, who cares about that average anyway? 30 companies, give me a break. Let's talk about the S&P 500. But anyway, this was the third worst for that month in this index's history, eclipsed only by 1930 and 1896. The Dow's loss during the second quarter is not ranked quite as close to the bottom as June's, but still low. Only 15 other years out of the last 112 have had second quarters with worse returns. And he goes on to try to look at statistics about what that means and can't find any meaning about that. So the Wall Street Journal had an article in their Sunday Journal, which, by the way, there is no Sunday Journal. It's only online. It was entitled, How to Buy and Hold and Sleep at Night. And they had 5 tips for how to buy and hold, how to invest in the market, even in troubling times. Number 1, create a plan. That means investing in low-cost index funds covering the U.S. market, perhaps 10 to 25% of your portfolio in international stock funds, plus exposure to bonds, and perhaps some money in money market or cash type account. Keep in mind that your focus is not to beat the market. People are just so much into investing is about beating the market, says Meir Statman, a professor of finance at Santa Clara University. No, it's about getting market returns from a diversified portfolio. Number 2, once your plan is in place, ignore it. Oh, so difficult to do when you're doing a show like the Mad Money Machine, isn't it? Statman says, I do virtually nothing. I do less than I do for my car. There's not even a need to change the oil regarding the portfolio. Mr. Statman says, if rebalancing worries you, don't even do that, except perhaps once every few years. And make sure you focus on getting back to your investment plan rather than chasing the winners of the moment. Number 3, accept risk. Yes, stock market investing is risky, but over the long haul, investors are rewarded if they adopt a long-term outlook and diversified investment plan. Risk is not something you want, says Ping Cheng, but oftentimes risk does go hand in hand with return. He's an investment officer of Ibbotson Associates, investment research and counseling firm owned by Morningstar in Chicago. Keep in mind, avoid this risk with money you need soon, say in the next year or two. And remember that the more you invest in one company, sector, or country, the more risk you're taking on. Number 4, stay in for the long haul. We have no idea what's coming tomorrow, and past market performance does not predict future results. So what is your alternative? Stick all your cash in a money market account, a CD, or slightly riskier bonds? You're not avoiding risk with this plan. Simply shifting to the risk that inflation will trump your return. Number 5, and the last one, Do what you can. The investment options available through your retirement plan may not be ideal. Invest there for the employer match, but ensure diversification through an account outside your employer plan, perhaps an individual retirement account or Roth IRA. Of course, the other thing I'd say about this tough, tough market right now is congratulations. Congratulations. I know with the average age of the demographic that filled out the survey on the MadMoneyMachine.com website that the average 40-year-old, you're still putting money to work. You're still earning money. You're still working and you're still investing. And congratulations to you. Wow. Stocks are on sale for you. You're able to buy stocks a whole lot cheaper than they were last October. What a great feeling that is for you. Congratulations.
Trouble's little and it's lonesome. You won't find it on any map, but you can take 3 steps in any direction and you're there. It's a place to be born. It's a place to live. It's a place to die and be forgotten. It's a town called Trouble. Trouble is a lonesome town.
Now, there was another article in the Wall Street Journal, June 3rd, 5 lessons from a wild first half. If dizzy investors can follow these rules, they should be able to survive whatever is ahead. And let's see what the 5 things are. Make some plans and stick to them. All right. Spend less, invest more. 3, don't get greedy, which I think is all about control your risk. Don't invest in risky stuff. 4, keep costs low. And that's a great theme to go with the 7th month of the year, which is silent partners and all the fees that you can that can eat up your investments if you invest in the wrong funds. And the 5th one from the journal article is reduce company ties. In other words, if you're working for a company and then you also have a whole lot of your net worth tied up investments in that company's stock, that's very risky. It's important to diversify your holdings away from your employer's stock. Let's take a look at the lazy portfolio smackdown that we have going on at MadMoneyMachine.com. Half the year is over, so where are we at the end of a half year? We have a competition going on. People, I've asked people to submit their lazy portfolios, and we're going to give away some prizes based upon those who had the highest return for the least amount of risk in 3 bands. Basically, which portfolio had the highest Sharpe ratio at the end of the year? For the year. Now, there, I've also keeping track of some professional lazy portfolios, and there is exactly 1 professional lazy portfolio that through June 30th is above 0, and that is the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio. What's it made up of? 25% Vanguard Total Stock Market, 25% the iShares Lehman 20-year bonds, 25% Vanguard short-term treasury bonds, and 25% Street Tracks Gold, ticker GLD. So a quarter stocks, quarter long-term bonds, quarter short-term bonds, and a quarter gold is the Harry Brown portfolio, and it's the one above water at this point. What about the competition, though? Guess who's back in the lead? I know you can guess this. I know you can tell me that with stocks down, back to where they were kind of in March, and the leader in March was who? It was none other than Mudfud, back from the dead at a gain of 15.2%. But wait a minute, who's in second place? Which portfolio is in second place and was in first place for a while Mr. Sharp portfolio at 10.8% through the half year. Tex Williams comes in third, 7.7%. Quasimodo fourth, 5.7%. Bolt, 2.3% gain on the year. And the other one above zero is Cosmo with a 1.6% gain. Pulling up the rear, down 13.5%, Pete B. And just in front of him, Chris Baskerville, down 13.1%. Best of luck in the second half, guys. Best of luck to everybody in the competition. And good luck to all of us in the rest of 2008. One thing I'm happy about is I looked back on iTunes again and the investing subcategory is back. Oh, that was so scary. That was about 3 or 4 days that I kept looking at iTunes and so disappointed to see that subcategories of podcasts were gone. And I don't know if you look out there or not, but if you look in the podcast business investing category, the first page that comes up has Mad Money Machine icon there, and people can click on that and learn about the show and so forth. Well, that page was gone, as were all subpages of podcasts. Maybe they're just doing restructuring, getting ready for the iPhone launch in 7 days. Have I mentioned that before? I got an email from Richard regarding show 116, the Couch to 5K running plan. Richard said, I toyed with the idea before because I've always wanted to run a marathon and found I could easily jog at a relaxed pace, it seemed, for unlimited time, although I did maybe 30 minutes maximum. I was not tired, just mostly bored. But as I play drums many times a week and walk or bike to work every day and walk and bike for fun a lot, I figured I'd get plenty of exercise, so I got lazy and stopped jogging. But at 42... I want to run the New York Marathon in the next few years, so you convinced me I should start again. I'll start at step one, just to make sure I don't overdo it, but probably move up a step each day that I jog. And yes, I've saved the Mad Men Machine Show 116 to a folder for my iPhone. Thanks again, Richard, drummer/percussionist. Well, thank you, Richard. Let me know how it goes. I hope you make it to step 12 and beyond. I'm so glad you joined me on this holiday weekend for the Mad Money Machine. My name is Paul Douglas Boyer, saying it takes money to make money, and it takes knowing where money comes from to make a Mad Money Machine. Doesn't it ever? I will see you next Friday, July 11th. In the meantime, please visit our sponsor, Index Funds Advisors, at IFA.com. Here's the things you need to do when you go to their website. First of all, I know many of you who have taken the survey at madmoneymachine.com have taken the risk capacity survey at IFA.com. Not everybody has, though. That's why I'm urging you to do that. That's the first step in knowing where you are in the investment world. Then, secondly, benchmark your portfolio. How well have you done compared to the index funds portfolios offered by index funds advisors? And then thirdly, click through the various tabs until you find something of interest to you and read and study a little bit more about indexing and why it is the best investing strategy. Some music on this program provided by music.podshow.com. I would like your feedback emailed to me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com or call the voicemail line 206-734-4763. Stay invested, everybody. Good luck in this market.